Hey, it is so good to be back with you. If any of you had a fight last night after the session, I extend my apologies. Okay, we laughed more last night, so maybe there were a lot more fights than I realized. We're going to pray. A couple reminders. Use the note cards, ask questions. It's a great way to ask the question you've always wanted to ask and not be blamed for asking the question. We're going to take a lunch break. Isn't the team doing an amazing job on hospitality? Come on. So feel free to use these. Drop them in the basket that's at the kind of check-in registration area. I've already grabbed a few. Also, if you don't have any questions, but maybe your spouse is at work today, other commitments, not able to be here, the note card will be a great tool for you if you want during the exercises that we're going to have. We're going to continue to do experiential exercises. I'm going to encourage you to be turning toward each other, because every time you turn toward each other, you're practicing something significant for your relationship. And so I realize, you know, there might have to get creative in how we do that. Maybe you text, maybe you record yourself on video, you know, whatever you need to do to kind of extend some of your heart and kindness to them through this process. And so we'll do that together. I want to paint a picture for you in light of it being 16 degrees. I think this is a very apt kind of point for where we're going today. And I just want you to picture like the warmth of a fire, okay? Like, just a nice fire that when it's 16 degrees, you have hope you will not die. Okay? You know, last night we talked about friendship. And we're going to kind of progress through some very much like tips and practices today that will help you foster your friendship. And so just, you know, that's like a nice fire, right? That's, you know, maybe like a miniature bonfire, if you will. It's pretty nice. How many of you love, like, the outdoors? I feel like Duluth is like an outdoorsy place. There's something really compelling about a fire. I mean, if you're camping, what happens around the fire? People gather. They kind of hang out. And it's weird. Like, time kind of slows down. You're kind of mesmerized. And you're there. And it, like, draws you in, right? But what happens if you have a fire that looks like this? It's lame, but every time I see this picture, I'm like, oh dear. Like, what's interesting is this is fire also. But immediately, it doesn't kind of cultivate that like warm, cozy feeling. This is the kind of fire that people are screaming, run. Run, run. Get away. It's still fire. Right? Like, what about this next one? Is it a controlled burn? Is it agriculturally beneficial? Or is this another one of those moments where you're praying the winds die down because it's just going to be a line of destruction? What about this one? Sometimes you kind of go, oh, like that looks nice, right? Again, it draws the couple together. It puts them in a posture of being present and sharing some space and maybe being at ease and comfortable. What about this last one? I see some heads kind of going like, yeah, in like 8 months. Not to taunt you, but I think my wife said it's supposed to be like 75 degrees this weekend in Pearland, and, you know, the beach is 40 minutes away, and so people are, I know, it's wrong. You could move. There's a great Vineyard Church in Pearland, Texas. But you shouldn't leave this one, so that's not a, sorry, Michael and Brenda. What's interesting, a fire well-tended draws people together. A fire well tended creates this moment for a shared experience and connection. And it kind of paints this picture, I think, of what matters in marriage. I was in a training and being trained by a couples therapist, and one of the things that they said is marriage is all about temperature control. Just like a good fire. When tended well, you keep adding logs and you pay attention and you tend it and you stoke it and you add fuel. It is like a really great experience. When you begin to disregard a fire and you throw water on it and you put it out, like you can actually do things to put a fire out. And when the fire's out, it's odd. People usually don't sit around and hang out anymore. They kind of part ways. It's the same for a marriage. Like when you disregard the temperature of your relationship and it begins to grow cold, you begin to believe things about your connection that may or may not actually be true. Some research that came out recently was interesting because basically what they were saying is marriages often fail because couples just grow apart. It's not that there was this devastating bomb that went off, which that does happen, but it's that they just stopped paying attention to the temperature of their connection. Now, on the flip side, I have this great memory as a kid camping with my dad and my brothers, and we would get these like cool screen shelters on the lake because we could just show up late on a Friday and like enjoy the weekend. And I remember this one time we were there, we were kind of getting camp set up and we had this good fire, and my dad had some gasoline and he had kind of doused it and lit it, and I just remember it was just like whoosh, whoosh, like just fire ran and it like jumped high and it was like this like just awesome like blaze, right? Well, I'll just be honest, like the temperature of a marriage when it's like being tended and you throw gasoline on your fire and it just combusts, that does not draw you closer together. When it's a forest fire and all you can think is run because it's no longer safe, that's just as damaging as letting the fire go out. Marriage is all about temperature control. One of the ways my wife and I have discovered kind of tending to the temperature of our marriage is a phrase that we like to say, keep the conversation going. Our goal in our marriage is to forever keep the conversation going. There were things, remember I shared last night, we had this 4 or 5 year stretch that was particularly challenging for us. During that 4 to 5 year window, our goal was to keep the conversation going. There were things we were working through and talking about, and our commitment was to just never close the conversation. We kept the pilot light on. We kept just enough temperature there that we could come back and we could tend and we could tend. We kept just enough heat on the fire to go, we're not there yet, we're not there yet, we're not there yet. But we refused, I think, to just choose the opposite, which was try to blow it up. One of the greatest gifts you can give each other is to become a couple that values the commitment to communicate. That's what we're going to talk about in this first session this morning is communication. Communication. You know, there's this interesting quote, and I think it was just so powerfully displayed last night in Dan and Mindy. But there's this idea that more marriages would make it if they realized that the better comes after the worse. And this will be a theme that'll run throughout kind of these next two sessions. More couples would make it if they realized the better often comes after the worse. The only way I think this is possible is through communication. It's digging a deeper commitment and connection in how you share your lives with one another. And honestly, this quote has given me a lot of hope because, again, you know, we talked about friendship and we talked about marriage. Like, think about this for a second. If there's not a better after the worst, then your marriage only makes it if you're perfect and you never have any challenges or struggle. Like the moment you have your first low, you're toast. Here's the other interesting thought, is when you say I do, everybody remember when you got married? Okay, yeah, sorry. We'll blame that on the cold, okay? We'll just blame that one on the cold. If marriage is all about like just keeping it like kind of comfortable and like hoping like, you know, you never struggle, or like we have to avoid all the struggle because then it just like all hope is lost, then what happens is you said, I do, and you are just in a slow decline into the end of your relationship. But the truth is, and this is what I want you to know when we talk about communication, is that you can actually invest in your relationship at any point and it can get better. When you start to communicate and you get more honest and you get more vulnerable and you get more real about where you are and what's going on, your connection gets stronger. You start putting the right logs on the fire and you're tending to the temperature of your marriage because you're no longer hiding. When you hide, you will feel alone. When you fail to risk what is true, you feel alone. When you keep back things that you want to share, you distance yourself from connection. Communication is absolutely essential and key to your connection in your marriage. I shared this last night, but when Prepare and Rich surveyed 50,000 couples, they found that communication is the most important aspect for a like vibrant connection. So friendship is what is about satisfying marriage. Communication is like the key to that. Communication is the single most important thing that you would do. And that's twofold. It's the capacity to hear your spouse and receive what they're sharing and work with them through that. And it's the courage to take what's inside of you and make it available to them. So you might have guessed this already, but I'm a verbal processor. This actually suits me pretty well because I like to talk through things. I grew up in a family that talked through things. So even in that, like again, I have a master's in this and I've done work in this and I've sat with couples in this. I will be honest, I have to risk and have courage to share things that I think might be problematic. I actually have to trust my spouse that she can hear hard words, uncomfortable perspective, or me being more honest about who I am with her. Communication is one of the riskiest things you'll do. You have to share and you have to be willing to receive from one another. It actually requires humility. That you're making room in your life for another human and their perspective that's probably different than yours. So what I want to do is I want to show a video this morning and we're going to allow you to go on a mini date afterwards and just talk about what stood out to you, okay? And here's what I want you to know. How many of you think communication is easy? Okay, everybody else. How many of you think it's hard? Okay. Well, check out this video and let's see what stands out to us.
Have you ever talked with a friend about a problem, only to realize that he just doesn't seem to grasp why the issue is so important to you? Have you ever presented an idea to a group and it's met with utter confusion? Or maybe you've been in an argument when the other person suddenly accuses you of not listening to what they're saying at all. What's going on here? The answer is miscommunication. And in some form or another, we've all experienced it. It can lead to confusion, animosity, misunderstanding, or even crashing a multi-million-dollar probe into the surface of Mars. The fact is, even when face-to-face with another person in the very same room and speaking the same language, human communication is incredibly complex. But the good news is that a basic understanding of what happens when we communicate can help us prevent miscommunication. For decades, researchers have asked what happens when we communicate. One interpretation, called the transmission model, views communication as a message that moves directly from one person to another, similar to someone tossing a ball and walking away. But in reality, this simplistic model doesn't account for communication's complexity. Enter the transactional model, which acknowledges the many added challenges of communicating. With this model, it's more accurate to think of communication between people as a game of catch. As we communicate our message, we receive feedback from the other party. Through the transaction, we create meaning together. But from this exchange, further complications arise. It's not like the Star Trek universe, where some characters can Vulcan mind meld, fully sharing thoughts and feelings. As humans, we can't help but send and receive messages through our own subjective lenses. When communicating, one person expresses her interpretation of a message, and the person she's communicating with hears his own interpretation of that message. Our perceptual filters continually shift meanings and interpretations. Remember that game of catch? Imagine it with a lump of clay. As each person touches it, they shape it to fit their own unique perceptions, based on any number of variables, like knowledge or past experience, age, race, gender, ethnicity, religion, or family background. Simultaneously, every person interprets the message they receive based on their relationship with the other person and their unique understanding of the semantics and connotations of the exact words being used. They could also be distracted by other stimuli, such as traffic or a growling stomach. Even emotion might cloud their understanding. And by adding more people into a conversation, each with their own subjectivities, the complexity of communication grows exponentially. So as the lump of clay goes back and forth from one person to another, reworked, reshaped, and always changing, it's no wonder our messages sometimes turn into a mush of miscommunication. But luckily, there are some simple practices that can help us all navigate our daily interactions for better communication. 1. Recognize that passive hearing and active listening are not the same. Engage actively with the verbal and nonverbal feedback of others and adjust your message to facilitate greater understanding. 2. Listen with your eyes and ears, as well as with your gut. Remember that communication is more than just words. 3. Take time to understand as you try to be understood. In the rush to express ourselves, it's easy to forget that communication is a two-way street. Be open to what the other person might say. And finally, 4, be aware of your personal perceptual filters. Elements of your experience, including your culture, community, and family, influence how you see the world. Say, "This is how I see the problem, but how do you see it?" Don't assume that your perception is the objective truth. That'll help you work towards sharing a dialogue with others to reach a common understanding together.
All right, so turn toward your spouse and just talk about what stood out to you. What did you notice most, or what captured your attention in the video? So I'd love to hear a little bit kind of from the room, but I'll just tell you, I've watched this video multiple times, And I often feel a little disheartened. I watch this video and I think, oh, like, is it even possible to communicate well? You know? And then I noticed different things. Like, I noticed, did you notice the couch potato? I love that. For the first time ever, when they were talking about listen with your eyes and your ears and your gut, the little ear was like doing like this little dance thing. Like, never seen that before. You know, I'd never like paid attention, you know? So I'm curious, what stood out to you? What, like, from kind of this part of the room, what was maybe something that you noticed about that video?
We could both identify with the first the one shape tosses the ball and then hits the other in the head and he runs away.
Yeah, that's right. You get hit with the ball and then run away, right? Like.
Or when he tosses the clay to her and just splashes the face instead of helping out.
That's right. So the other one was like the clay splat on the face and the person runs away. Yeah, like you can relate to that. Absolutely. What's kind of from this middle third? What's something that y'all noticed?
The last purple character had a man bun.
The man bun. It was there. You raised your hand.
Like being involved with listening. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay, and then usually an argument breaks out because we just have a lot of chaos.
Yeah.
We're not really like involved listening. And like, what I think is black and white, and he should completely understand.
Yes.
Frustrated because I'm like, it's simple. Why aren't you getting it?
And yeah.
He understands things differently, and I understand what he's saying differently.
That's right. So, in case you couldn't hear, this idea of like really engaging well and not being distracted by all the chaos that goes on. So like being involved when you listen, and then the moment that you're explaining something that might feel as clear as like black and white, like it's not confusing. It should be easy to understand, and the other person is not connecting to it the way you are. That creates an interesting moment for miscommunication. Okay, what about from this side of the room? Right here?
Instead of the clay being tossed back and forth,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, they're tossing it, but the person that caught it perceives shapes are different.
That's right.
And then you toss it back, and they're like, no, it's shaped this way.
Yep. It's just the ever-changing moment of, like, every time I touch the clay, I'm changing it to fit me probably more than being attentive to them, and I go back, and it's just this back and forth. That's a great observation. Maybe from back there, like, one more? I was thinking similarly, like... One of the things that's risky is the moment you say something, it's out there. You've said it. And what if they don't hear it the way you intended it? Or what if they do and it was hurtful? What if you meant to hit them with the words that you were throwing at them? You know, there's all these factors that go into communication. Are you tired? Are you hungry? Are you upset? Did somebody say something to you at work? Did you tried really hard, the first exchange didn't go well, so then you shut down. Did you have a family that was talkative? Did you have a family that was quiet? What's the idea? Like, do you think we should be talking about this? Is it black and white? Like, and it goes on and it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. So why would we risk communication? Can it be done well? What does it take to communicate well? Do you ever feel like this is one of the greatest challenges you face? What I think we're finding is that in relational health, your emotional connection matters immensely. And I think it's really hard to build an emotional connection if you are not working at communicating. Here's the other thing. I think it's also hard to grow in communication if you think you're good at it and it's your spouse's fault that you're not communicating well. Like, I think we need to become the kind of people that will adjust who we are to be mindful and thoughtful of the person in front of us, especially in marriage. It's not their job to change who they are to fit you. Like, it's collectively, this mutual moment of saying, let's figure this out together. Let's be on the same team. Let's remember that we're for each other. You know, there's this moment in the video that struck me this morning that was like what I believe about the person communicating to me. So if I'm talking to my spouse and I start the conversation not trusting them or thinking, you don't believe in me, you don't care about me, you're not for me, guess how I'm going to hear everything that they say? Negatively. I'm going to translate all the body language and all the tone, right? Because that tone, I'm so tired of you using that tone with me. Isn't that a big factor here? What we're saying is it's all the emotional stuff. That's actually, I think, what's happening. Like, you're so smart. Does that sound like a nice compliment?
I like that.
Oh, I love when you do the dishes like that. Jeez. I mean, I told y'all to compliment each other last night, right? See, it actually is about what am I saying about you? What am I saying about myself? Communication matters. Here's some thoughts on how we can communicate well from some people who've really studied this. Here's the first thing. Learn how to speak for yourself. Like, I statements are important in your connection where you take ownership for your perspective, your thoughts. And I'm not saying like we should embrace like, I think you're stupid. Like, that's not going to help. But at some point, if that's actually what's going on for you internally, like, that's exposing probably a barrier to your connection. I'm going to talk more about this when we deal with conflict. So when I'm talking about I statements is like, I'm feeling afraid right now. I'm concerned about our finances. I would like to have more money in our savings account. I would like to go on vacation with you, and I think we should use money from our savings account. I am hopeful. I am afraid. I am tired. I am concerned. Like, you need to get more connected to yourself and then share those things with your spouse so you regularly could take time for daily dialogue. It's one of the tips in Prepare Enrich when they're helping couples kind of grow together is that you should spend time every day talking. How much time do you need to spend talking? Some really good research on intimacy says 15 minutes a day. If you can commit to 15 minutes a day of eye contact and sharing who you are with each other, the cumulative effect of that will be significant for your connection. So make time to talk to each other every day. Make time to compliment each other. Remember? Like, I love when you do the dishes. It makes my life easier. Thank you for teaching the kids how to do their laundry at age 4. I was like, I should write a book on that. Like, be a bestseller. I've said this before, and it's going to sound silly, but like, if you are really distressed as a couple, it can be hard to sometimes see things worth complimenting. Your attention is so much on the pain and the hurt and the disappointment, you start to like lose sight for good things. And the other trap is that we expect our spouse to be good to us. So why should I say, thank you for doing the dishes? You're an adult, you do the dishes. You're the one making the mess. No, like, we have to shift our perspective on this. So we should be able to say things like, thank you for breathing today. Like, you're still here. You've not quit yet. Like, what I'm trying to point out is that we need to communicate some things at whatever point we are and choose a trajectory that will move us to a fire that is more compelling. Daily. Every day. Every day. Daily dialogue, daily compliments. One of the tips from the Gottman Institute is this idea of bids for connection. Okay, write that down. This is really important. Bids for connection. I'm going to try to do my best to kind of paint a picture of how this works. But when we begin to realize that so much of what's happening in our interaction is that our spouse is just reaching for us, they're making a bid for our connection with them, it begins to kind of reorient us that that's actually an invitation. And so picture this couple at home, right? Do y'all like football?
Yeah.
Okay. Who do we cheer for?
Steelers.
Packers. Packers.
I heard some different things. There's some of this same thing that happens in Texas. It's okay. So the game's on. You know, just had some good food. So game's on. Spouse is at the sink, kind of doing some dishes, looking out the window. And this really pretty red bird flies in front of the window and lands on the tree. And the spouse goes, "Hey, honey, look at this red bird." "I got you." And she's like, "No, I'm watching the game." He's like, "But this red bird's beautiful. Come look at it." She's like, "I don't care about the red bird. The Packers are playing the Vikings." Here's the thing. One, I set that up to trick you, and it worked because you all laughed. The whole point is this. A bid for connection is I see something that sparks intrigue in me or interest in me or desire in me, and I say, "Hey, come look at this bird." And my spouse doesn't care about red birds. But I would love to believe my spouse cares about me and things that are interesting to me. A bid for connection is not about whatever I say, "Hey, come look at this." What I'm actually saying is, "Come be with me. Come be with me. Come connect with me. Come kind of just go, oh yeah, it looks like the red bird you showed me yesterday. It looks like the red bird you showed me yesterday." It's the same sort of thing. It's like, "Hey, come look at this amazing catch. They're going to show it on replay." And it's like, "I don't care. Good for them. They're 6'4", athletic, and getting paid millions of dollars to play a game. Hey!" Those are fighting words. Do you realize, when you're married, all these things that we think are important pale in comparison to how important the connection you have with your spouse is. Think about what you fought about 5 months ago. Most of you cannot remember. Like on this day, if you on the calendar 5 months ago, what was the fight you had just kind of worked through? You probably don't remember. 2 years ago, what did you fight about? You probably don't remember. The point is that what actually matters is how do you feel about your connection and how well are you communicating right now? Communication is the space that draws us together. It's, "Hey, come look at this. Hey, we need to sit down and work through our finances because I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling afraid for our future. Well, I don't want to talk about our money. I don't like talking about money." You're married. We have to learn sometimes how to get past our own little things and our own ideas about how this works and begin to realize when you said "I do," you opened your life to another human and y'all are working at it together. And the way we work at it together is we grow a habit and pattern of communication that's daily, that's about blessing each other, and that we begin to listen with our ears and look with our eyes and pay attention to our gut of when is this person reaching out for me? Hey, could we go on a date next week? They send a text. Hey, I'm thinking about you. Text messages, phone calls, dates, red birds, football games, whatever it might be. All of those are expressions of communicating, saying, hey, pay attention to me. Look at me. Consider me. I think we have to begin to be more interested in our spouse than we fully realize. We have to grow our interest in them. And there's some really cool psychological research that says when you pay attention to someone and when you listen to them and when you smile at them, your affection for them increases. They did this with complete strangers. So here's like a really practical tip. Practice smiling at each other more. There was this really cool psychological study that was done, and they had people take a pen or a pencil, and if you take it and you put it in your mouth and you hold it with your lips, it makes you frown. So they had one group that did that, and they had another group that held it in their teeth. You smile. Guess which group felt happier at the end of their time they were told to hold the pen or pencil? The teeth group. They smiled. Maybe we should practice daily smiles at each other. It sounds silly, right? So like here's the interesting thing about all the material I'm presenting to you this weekend. I've asked you to be good friends. I've asked you to talk to each other. And I've asked you to smile at each other. And you're probably thinking like, look, that's like elementary. That's like pre-K, like marriage. Like, when are you going to talk about like the real hard stuff? That is the real hard stuff. It's the stuff we neglect. It's the stuff we get too busy for. It's the stuff that we kind of grow tired of. It's the fact that we get disinterested. And then you know what happens when the real hard stuff shows up? It crushes you. Because you don't have friendship. You don't have patterns of communication. And you have stopped smiling at each other. So it's actually not elementary, it is essential. We have to show up and communicate. We have to talk to each other. We have to share what's real. One of the ways we can practice this is through journaling and writing. Putting our words and thoughts on paper and then sharing it to each other. Anybody ever written letters to you, to like your significant other? Emails? It's more, you know. There's this interesting pattern. I think when you slow down to write somebody a letter, you're communicating with them. As a tip, if you want to grow in your communication, get a notebook and just become pen pals. I'm serious. This is actually like a real thing. Write in the notebook and then give it to them. They have to slow down and read it. They have to consider it. Then they write their response. They give it back. Pass it back and forth. This is a way to slow you down. It's a way to kind of remove the emotion of the moment out of it, of you're not listening to me, you don't care about me, you don't hear anything I say. It's a way to value what the other person is sharing with you, and it's a way to practice kind of going back and forth. Some of you might need to put that into practice. Grab a communication notebook and start writing to each other. Here's some other skills for active listening. I've already said this, I'm going to say it again. Focus on being interested, not interesting. Don't try to one-up each other all the time. How was your day? It was miserable. Yeah, mine was too. You know, like you just bypass the fact that their day was miserable and you tell them how miserable your day was. Be interested. Remember, tell me more. Tell me more. Ask questions. How did that presentation go? What were the kids like today? What did you eat for lunch? Like just become like an enthusiast about your spouse and like learning about them, discovering what their day was like, what was going on for them. Ask questions. Look for commonalities. If you've been married a long time, you might think you already know everything about each other. You don't. And you might have like gotten married and then you thought, man, I thought we were so much similar and I just keep finding all the differences about us. That's okay. It keeps things interesting. But you do need to work to find common ground. It's like, do you like the mountains or the beach? Well, if you're different, then just vacation in Hawaii, okay? You get both. Like, find common ground. You can actually find ways to bring your lives together, and you just got to do the work for it. Find common ground. Tune in with all your attention. Tune in with all your attention. Put the phone away. Turn the TV off. Get present. Eye contact. We're practicing every time we go on a mini date, and I ask you to turn toward each other. You've already been practicing to listen with all your attention. Paraphrase what the speaker says, confirming that you've heard them. What I hear you saying is this. Probably the first time you're not going to hear it right. Here's something that I found myself doing, and I'm just going to, like, maybe this makes sense to some of you. So often I would listen and think my spouse was talking about me. That's kind of self-absorbed. I know. I'm working on it. Normally they're talking about themselves, but I think so often we've learned to kind of like filter marriages like, you know, are you trying to say something about me? Is this about me? So we have to work to kind of go back, like, let me really hear you. Let me really understand. Maintain eye contact. Validate emotions. Here's something that I think is really important here around emotions. I think our culture has learned that, like, emotion is scary. And so often in marriage and couples, it's like, man, I've had a really hard day. I'm feeling emotional. And so what do we want to try to help them do? Feel better. Let me help you feel better real quick. Oh, don't cry. Stop crying. Like, don't cry. One of the things that's really hard to do for a couple is connect if you're not validating emotion first. Validate the emotion, then work together on what do we do next. But learn how to care for the emotion. Learn how to say, I see this is really painful for you, and don't move too quickly. When I see you cry, it makes me feel uncomfortable because what I really want to do is help you feel better. Learn how to sit with each other in their emotional space. Thank you for telling me that. I didn't realize it was so hard. I didn't know you were feeling these things. Can you tell me more about that? Validate emotion. Turn off all the devices. Unless your spouse is asking you to be friends and watch Netflix, then you watch Netflix. Ultimately, let me ask you a question. For those of you that work, what's like a normal work week? How many hours? 40. Do you spend 40 hours talking to your spouse, working on your marriage? No. There's not enough hours in the day, right? Like, how many of you want to retire from work one day? A few of us. So we pour 40 hours so that we can pay bills, we can do all this stuff. We pour into our work and we spend ourselves and we're exhausted. And what do we kind of begin to do? Neglect the conversation that we would love to have through retirement. So paint a long view of this. Paint a long view. The importance of communication. I love this quote. This kind of summarizes kind of some good tips here. And then we're going to do one more experiential exercise. Try to feel excited when the person you're listening to is excited. Like, try to draw your emotion close to their emotion. Or concern when the other person is concerned. Is there something in me that I can connect with that matches what you're connecting with? Reflect the other person's emotions not only verbally, but also with your facial expressions. Like, tune in. 80% of communication is nonverbal. Tone, body language, eye contact, all the things you're doing. It's communicating, but also with your facial expressions. It isn't always easy, and it takes a bit of energy, but it will help you tune in to the thoughts and emotions of anybody you're having a conversation with. Tune in. Learn how to tune yourself to your spouse. Sharing, listening, communicating, risking, putting yourself out there. And here's the thing. It's not going to always go well. And I'm going to set that example. Here's what I'm going to have everybody stand up. Y'all been sitting for a long time. Stand up. I need one spouse on this side of the room. I need the other spouse on that side of the room. Spread out. We're going to create kind of like, and I realize, like, not everybody has a spouse, so maybe you make a friend. You can still practice. Or you can just sit and watch. It's okay. So spread out. Okay. This is an experiential exercise I like to call proving my point, okay? I'm trying to prove a point here. One of the important things in communication, when my wife and I say keep the conversation going, is that we are committed to always come back and look for each other, to reconnect, to find space again when we're together. The Gottmans talk about falling toward each other in conversation and in conflict. We want to move toward each other. Okay? Most of us, I assume, at some point leave our spouse. I'm actually making the assumption that there are points in your day or in your life you're not always together. Okay? One of the things in communication is a way you can say, I'm looking for you. We've talked about the importance of body language, of eye contact. It helps build intimacy. So here's what I want you to do. I want everybody to close your eyes. Okay? And with your eyes closed, I want you to traverse the room and find each other. No, stop. Okay, no, we don't need any insurance claims. You know, we don't want that. Do you realize how hard it is to find somebody in a room that has tables like this with your eyes closed? I was doing this a month ago, and one person thought, it was the first time it's ever happened. I've done this exercise a lot. Everybody always feels uncomfortable and laughs because it does prove the point. But they yelled their spouse's name. I was like, okay. We're trying, right? Eye contact matters immensely. It values the person. It says, I'm looking for you. I see in you a gift. So with your eyes open, I want you to move across the room carefully. I want you to find your spouse and just experience what it might be like to reconnect. You might say something. You might be quiet. You might just put your hands palm to palm. But do that now and just experience what it's like coming back together with the intent of saying, I'm looking for you. Maybe smile at each other. See what that's like. Well done. Maybe the thing I just want to encourage you to is that communication is an intentional choice. You have to be intentional. And you have to choose to reach for each other. And this will require both of you investing and taking the lead at different points. If you're not where you want to be, one of the greatest things you can say is, I realize this is where we are. I would love for you to know I have a hope or a desire that we would grow closer. I'm interested in growing our communication. You don't have to say how bad it is. You can actually just communicate, I would be interested in more regular conversation with you. I would love to talk in the evening for 5 minutes. There's a really good rhythm for intimacy, development, and communication is central in this because I think you have to begin to start practicing time together. You have to make time for each other. 15 minutes a day. Working towards maybe one date time a week. You can date each other at home. Doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be elaborate. A date is where you commit to protect time to show up and connect with each other. Maybe you have to put a lot of kids to bed. Maybe you have to do some creative things. Maybe you have to wake up early. But there's something really powerful about saying, hey, I would love to see you at 9:30 tonight to talk. After we get through our whole day, after we've both been at work all day and we've taken care of family and friends and loved ones. Connect daily. Begin to build the rhythm of connecting intentionally with one date a week. Set aside some time monthly of kind of doing something special, like giving a day to each other. Let's go have a picnic. Let's spend time together. Let's come ready to share some important things together. Here's what I'll tell you. One of the benefits of that is you can actually have meaningful conversation without the heat of the moment driving it. You can say, hey, I would love to plan time with you once this month to just hear what's important to you. Is there something about our relationship we need to talk about that we've not been talking about? And go find a comfortable, safe space to do that. Come ready. Maybe think about like a little getaway. Begin to put your time, energy, and resources that you would plan one trip a year to rekindle and tend to the fire of your marriage. These rhythms of intimacy, daily communication, weekly date nights, monthly priority, annual priority will sow deeply into your bond. And the more emotionally connected you are, the more intimately connected you will be. I once heard somebody say, you date to get married, you date to stay married. You date to get married, you date to stay married. Find each other again. Cultivate like an open heart, a soft mind. Begin to smile at each other. The more you do these things in the everyday of your life, then you'll be ready to deal with the hard things. It's really hard to deal with conflict and like hot button issues if you don't trust each other, if you don't believe the best about each other. There's an approach to therapy. It's the most research-informed approach for success in clinical work, particularly around things like anxiety and depression. It's called cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. Maybe you've heard of it. It's really good research around it. And basically what they're saying in CBT is if you think the right thoughts, cognitive, and you act the right way, behavioral, your life will go better for you. Sounds easy enough, right? Just think the right things about your spouse. Behave the right way towards your spouse, and your marriage immediately gets better. Well, that's the end of the conference, so... just hang with me for just a second. Okay, if I just think the right thoughts... and I'm the kind of person who's been transformed and I'm just awesome towards my spouse. It sounds like easy enough, right? So why would I not think good things about my spouse? Why would I not behave in good ways towards my spouse? I want to read to you a passage of scripture that has been really helpful for me. It's one of my favorites. It's in Philippians, which is New Testament. Philippians 4 says this: rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. I think one of the primary places you have to do battle for your marriage is in your own thought life and what you are focusing on. If in your mind and in your heart you are harboring all the disappointment, when you look at your spouse, all you see is where they failed, where they disappointed, where they wounded, where they're like not your favorite person anymore. If that is what you foster and cultivate in your internal experience of them, guess what? You won't want to be connected to them. You won't trust them. You won't believe in them. Whatever is right, whatever is true, whatever is lovely, whatever is worthy of praise, think about those things. You can be empowered to do the hard work of seeing the best in your spouse, of blessing them, of encouraging them, of expressing gratitude and thankfulness for them, whatever is worthy of praise. What is true? I've committed my life to you. Learning how to grow a habit and pattern of rejoicing together, of welcoming the presence of God to come near, and all the anxious thoughts and all the worries and all the frustrations, that you begin to cultivate a life of prayer. Your communication with your spouse will be improved if you improve your communication with the living God. In your life, the things that are challenging you, pray about them over and over and over again, and do the work to reorient your own heart and mind. When I begin to work on my interior thoughts about my spouse, I'm poised to do better in conflict. Because I'm coming to these moments of tension and these moments of frustration and these hurts, and I'm saying, I'm bringing this to you because I believe the best about you. I believe you're interested in working through this, of us finding healing together. And the thing that's hard about conflict is that most oftentimes, I'm sure there's maybe an exception to what I'm about to say, but I'm going to step out on a limb and say, we need healing where the hurt actually is. Anybody ever broken their leg before? Did they cast your arm? No. This is why relationships are really hard, because so often I'm hurt by my spouse, which kind of pushes me away from them, when in all actuality, what we need is to move toward each other so that the healing can happen where the hurt is. And if you've been married for more than a day, and honestly, maybe on your wedding day, you hurt each other, you have to learn how to deal with conflict. You have to learn how to press into the hard places, the uncomfortable places, and say, I'm committed to working through this together. We will pursue the Lord's presence together. We will pursue forgiveness together. And it might take multiple conversations. It might take years of hard work. And like we heard last night, community and counseling and resources, but it's worth it. What's interesting is I just thought about this. This is like a moment of inspiration. If you break your leg, think about all the professional help you need to get it right. You go get x-rays, and you maybe have surgery from like an orthopedic team and an anesthesiologist and nurses, and then you're in your room and they got it all like propped up, and then you like have all these things helping you for days and for weeks, and then guess where you go? Physical therapy. And you have to get it strong again, and you have to have community help you, and you have people bring you meals, and you realize that to heal big hurts takes a lot of professionals and community and care, and we don't think twice about it. What about our marriage? What about realizing you're in a room full of couples that have shown up to say, we'll work on our marriage. This is your community. Don't live the lie that it's just us and we're the only ones that are maybe struggling and we're going to stay hidden. Step forward and begin to pursue the resources you need to work through it. I'll just tell you, the person you're here with, whether it's your first marriage or maybe it's not your first marriage, however long you've been married, you are now at a place you've never been together. You've never been this married this long with the person you're with. This is a new day. You might discover things that you never have had to go through before. It's a new day. This weekend might spark opportunity for you to learn how to handle conflict in ways you've never handled it before. It's a new day. It's a new opportunity. There is an invitation for you to have the resources you need. Brenda shared an amazing option for you. Marriage mentors, the marriage course, talking to a friend, getting prayer. These are all the things we need to more effectively step forward, because if you're going to handle conflict well, your personal transformation will be the key. becoming a safer person, becoming a kinder person, becoming somebody who will hang in there as many nights as it takes, as many weeks as it takes, as many months as it takes. And in our case, as many years as it took to realize we were in a very different place. My wife and I did not have our first fight until after our first wedding anniversary. All of our dating, our entire engagement, first year of marriage, not a single fight. I don't recommend that. Only in this. We were all in. We were all committed before we had to realize that we had to learn how to fight. You need to learn how to handle conflict well. Remember the master versus disaster couples last night? Question for you to think about in a very short mini date. When it comes to conflict, which group has more conflict? Master couples or disaster couples? Go. Talk to your spouse. All right. If you think master couples have more conflict, raise your hand. If you think disaster couples have more conflict, raise your hand. Okay, everybody raise your hand. It's the same. Master couples and disaster couples have the same amount of conflict. Conflict is not what determines if you are healthy or not. Where they become radically different is master couples have a significantly better quality in the way they handle conflict. They fall toward each other every time. Disaster couples, when they get in conflict, push away, run away, repel each other. They fall away from each other in conflict, but master couples have found a way to fall toward each other in conflict. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is patient and kind. There's this place where we fall toward each other in conflict. Here's another quick mini date for you to talk about. When it comes to conflict, out of 100% of our conflict, what percentage is solvable? It can be resolved. What percent is perpetual? You will always want different kinds of toothpaste. One person wants Colgate, one person wants Crest every time. Okay? What percentage is solvable and which percentage is perpetual? They need to add up to 100. So like 50-50, vice versa. Go. Talk amongst yourselves. It's not 50-50. That was not a secret. Give you the answer. There is more of one compared to the other. Solvable, non-solvable. Okay, if you think on average there's more, like the percentage is larger of things you will solve, raise your hand. All right? If you think it is the larger percentage is the perpetual stuff, you're never going to actually solve it. It's going to forever be there. Raise your hand. You with your hands up are right. 70% of conflict. 70% of conflict, they say, is perpetual. What? That removes any hope that this can be good, right? Here's what it says. What it says is you're married to somebody who is different than you. It really is about toothpaste. I heard this great story. A couple had been married for 25 years and they were forever frustrated because there is a right way to roll the toothpaste and there is a wrong way to squeeze the toothpaste in the middle. Some of you agree, apparently. 25 years in, you know what they started doing? Two tubes of toothpaste every time they went to the grocery store. I will roll mine the right way and you can destroy yours. they weren't going to solve it. Like, they have diabolically opposed views of how you squeeze toothpaste out of the tube of toothpaste. So they came up with a creative solution. This is actually true for you. You know, one of you is a morning person, one of you is a night owl. That's not changing. Probably. So here's what they're finding in the research around conflict that I think is so good. How many of you have ever heard of conflict management? Anger management, right? No. There's this historical view when it comes to conflict that it's about managing it. Just think about kind of what that does for you when you hear me say it. And even the way I kind of, it's like I'm pass blocking. Like, okay, we're going to manage this, we're going to manage that. What they're finding for healthy couples is that it's actually about repair. It's all about repair. When you experience a hurt, a tearing apart, a disappointment, a letdown, the entire thing hinges on your capacity to come back together and repair your bond and secure your bond moving forward from that moment and event. It's all about repair. I love that. How do you do that? That's a great question. How does this work? Well, before lunch, I'm going to give you a little insight. We're going to do some Q&A, which I'll probably talk a little more about it. And then we're going to finish because I think our intimacy hinges on our capacity to repair. I think if we get really good at repairing in our relationship, we are building trust, we're building safety, we're building security, and we are believing this is a person I can fully give myself to, I can fully trust, because no matter what we face, we will find our way together on the other side of it, and every one of those moments deepens our connection. The better comes after the worse. It is building a view of marriage that the goal is not to avoid conflict, but to deepen connection. And the only way, I promise, the only way you can have a deep connection is if you push through the places of conflict, because what you will begin to declare is our bond is more intimately united than the hard stuff that comes our way. Our relationship is finding strength and stability to navigate the suffering of life, the disappointments of life, the discouragement of life, and there is a person on the planet that's reflecting God's heart for me that says, I will be with you and I will walk with you through every circumstance. I choose you. I forgive you. I will humble myself before you and say, will you forgive me? I blew it. Repairing our relationship over and over and over and over and over again declares a powerful truth that reveals the heart of God. So here's the sneak peek into how we handle and repair things. It's called the HEAR method. H-E-A-R, I hear you. I hear you. Anytime we're going to repair when it comes to conflict is we are acknowledging there is a real hurt. There's a real hurt. And so what's unique about this is, you know, sometimes like you know you've hurt the person, right? Like you can see it. But it does require the wounded party to have the courage, and I'll also say the humility. I think those words go together often. To be clear and say, I am hurting. And you might go, well, shouldn't my spouse know? Shouldn't they be so attentive to me that they can see I'm hurting? Sometimes. But then you're expecting them to read your mind. You're expecting them to know things that they might not know. You're actually expecting them to have information about your experience that they probably don't have, which is probably part of the reason they hurt you. So, a practical tip for couples to do well is if you've been hurt, You need to own it, and you need to be willing to say, here's where I'm at. That hurt me. The wounded person begins the healing process. I think I need to go to the ER because my leg is going the wrong direction. Right? Like, my kids regularly ask me for Band-Aids when they are not even bleeding. Have a sense of ownership. Be empowered. This is about building an emotional maturity that I can bring my hurt to this person and I can say, hey, this wasn't good. I'm experiencing a tearing in our relationship because of what happened. Hurt. Now, once you've done that, your spouse gets lots of opportunity to meet you and help repair, because the next step is that the spouse who did the wounding needs to practice empathy. Empathy. You connect at an emotional level and you value and validate your spouse's hurt. You have to slow down. Here's a great video about empathy from Brené Brown.
So what is empathy? And why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions, where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment. Not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, you can climb down. I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time. Because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So, I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
Once there's a wound, the wound has already occurred. We're not going back. Our response at that moment is not going to remove it. The connecting can repair it. The attentiveness, the thoughtfulness, the humility to say, I am more aware of what the impact of my action, my words, my forgetfulness. I realize you were impacted by this. I see and feel and hear your hurt. It's not a response to try to make it go away. It's a moment to say, I'm with you. I'm here. There's a hurt. We have to grow in our empathy. And as the one who was a participant in wounding, we need to accept responsibility. And you might go, well, what if I didn't mean to hurt them? Well, are they hurt? Well, what if they were the ones who took it the wrong way? There's all these ways we can back out of it. But repair happens when you become the kind of spouse that goes, if I in any way, intentionally or unintentionally, contributed to your hurting, I care about that. I will take responsibility for the fact that the words I used were harmful to you. I will take responsibility for being 3 minutes late to our date. I'll take responsibility for the actions and the choices. I will. That requires humility. I'll accept responsibility for that. You know what's really powerful when you begin to accept responsibility? And I'm not saying, you know, just make it up so it like makes it go away and just pretend. No, I'm saying like find the thing in the conversation you can actually own. You can own. I did not realize how painful it was to you that I took that phone call. I was feeling pressure at work, and it was a deal I was trying to close. And what I realized is I chose work over you in that moment, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry that that hurt you. And if you can get to that place, if you can realize there was a real hurt, but I begin to realize I can choose connection with you and we can move towards repair and I can have the courage and the humility to accept responsibility for the way I participated in your wounding, it is so much easier to request forgiveness. Will you forgive me for that? Will you forgive me that I took that phone call on our date? Instead of just having the courage to tell work, like, I'll be there in an hour. Would you forgive me for, you know, just being too tired? Like, I'm pouring a lot into the kids right now. And I'm aware of that. And I see that that's impacting you. And our relationship is being neglected. I'll take responsibility for like feeling the responsibility and the pressure of parenting in a way that causes me to not have a lot left over for you. In both cases, there's a participation to repair. It's the courage and humility to say, I'm hurting. This is where I'm at. And it's the courage and humility to say, I care. I'll take responsibility for my actions, for my thoughts, for my feelings. Will you forgive me? We're going to dig into this a little bit more after lunch, but you can do this. This is an incredibly helpful four-step process that brings you together, that's about fueling connection, that's about fueling repair. Because at the end of the day, what is true is no matter what the wound is, healing is possible. Forgiveness is a central theme of God's kingdom. The research says forgiveness is important. The research says repair is important. I think what they're connecting to is the truth of how God set things up so that we can have a right relationship with one another, and that applies to our marriage. Well, how many times do we forgive? A lot more than we think. If you think you're getting to the point that like, look, I've been forgiving you a lot. Like that's where we move into some other conversations. Like how many people in the room need to embrace their own personal transformation? Everybody. I'm going to talk a little more about this over the weekend services. Conflict is normal. Everybody has it. And because you have it, it does not mean you're not soulmates or you're not meant to be together. That might have been judgmental, I'm sorry. What it does mean is you're human and you're imperfect and you're in a very intimately connected space that comes with lots of expectations and thoughts and ideas, and you are going to have conflict. Choices you make will have significant implications for your spouse. And there is a real path to repair. There is a real trajectory to hope and healing. And it is found, I believe, in a life given to Jesus, where I experience the living God speak to me about who I am, extend me forgiveness in the greatest measure possible, and I give that to my spouse. The kingdom of God gives us a framework for relationship even when there's been wounding. And it's the movement of Jesus towards you and towards me. It's the work of the Holy Spirit inspiring compassion and grace. Hurt, empathy, accept responsibility, and request forgiveness. We've got a couple minutes till lunch. It's going to be an incredible lunch served. You're going to bring it back in here. But I'm going to give us 60 seconds of silence. And I want you to think, is there something I've been holding on to? And because I've been holding on to it, it's a barrier to our connection. And if I was willing to risk a kind and patient conversation, and we could experience this, forgiveness, we would be more closely connected because of that. Is there a conversation you need to have? Is there a hurt you've been holding on to? So God, I pray that as we move towards lunch, that your Spirit would inspire courage and humility in each person. I pray that you would begin to illuminate the reality of your kingdom as a kingdom that comes and redeems and restores. That in the life of Jesus, we see a person fully reflecting the glory of God and declaring forgiveness. I pray for couples who are experiencing distress right now, that you'd begin to draw them forward, that there is hope and healing. There is the potential for repair. I pray for a greater measure of grace. Greater measure of grace, where out of self-protection, we've had to harden our heart. We've had to distance ourselves. I pray that you just begin to soften hearts and minds and begin to just welcome the possibility of repair back into the story. We receive this food with gladness and joy. In Jesus' name, amen.